From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly podcast about all things politics and policy here in California. I'm John Myers from KQED, and Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, my comrade in arms, is this is really a statewide newscast today. You're in, where are you?
I've got the South covered in my ancestral homeland of Santa Monica, California.
So in nice and bright, sunny Southern California.
Yeah, yeah, bright, sunny, all that good stuff.
All right, so you're reporting from our SoCal bureau today for this podcast.
I'm manning the beach beat.
All right, so let's talk about what's going on this week.
Okay.
Now that we've rambled on all these other things, it's hard to say that anything is going on beyond this budget impasse, and not only the budget impasse, but a severe budget problem. I know that there are people in the Capitol who like to say it's a revenue problem and not a budget problem. But I think to the average person, that's a semantic game. It's a budget problem. There's nowhere near enough money to pay for state government. And I don't see anyone moving off of their traditional battle lines at this point. I don't know what you've seen this week.
No, I've seen or not seen much of the same. I mean, the state is on track, according to the analysis of the Department of Finance and the Legislative Analyst Office, to run out of cash sometime in February. And so the governor has called the special session, ostensibly to promote some combination of spending cuts and tax increases. And you're never going to guess what happened. The Democrats don't want any cuts. The Republicans don't want any tax increases. And here we go again.
That's a shocker.
It is a shocker. The Assembly Speaker Karen Bass, yesterday in an interview with the Sacramento Bee,
that would be Wednesday.
Right. Wednesday, not yesterday, because today definitely isn't Thursday. Reiterated that she wants help from the federal government, but she wants help from the federal government instead of spending cuts, not in addition to. That's different than the governor's position. The governor also wants and is hoping for some help from the federal government, but thinks that it should be a combination of sort of a three-legged stool of some federal help, some spending cuts, and some tax increases. And the legislative Republicans don't want tax increases. So this doesn't seem to be a whole lot different from where we were just a couple of months ago.
Well, and you know what's interesting as we look back at the week is that when you look at the things that are being talked about, you talked about Speaker Bass with this notion that we would get a significant amount of help from the federal government. And then if you look at what legislative Republicans have been talking about this week, they want to go back into the California Performance Review, the governor's idea back in 2004 of blowing up the boxes, quote-unquote, of government and finding all these efficiencies. But if you look at all of that, you really don't see – I don't know any objective analyst who sees anything new on the table that would resolve the problem short of massive cuts in taxes. I mean, those are all lovely ideas, but they don't get you where you need to go fast enough.
Right. We're not talking about trying to save a little bit of money on the fringes here. We're talking about 10% of the state budget. I mean, we're talking about $11 billion in a $100 billion budget. There's been a call to action by the governor. It doesn't, and the legislature was supposed to come in this weekend I'm not sure what they were supposed to do, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen, and it doesn't look like there's going to be any resolution in this so-called lame duck session, such as it was. It was officially gaveled down, but there was no floor session, no deliberation and no substantive policy debate on any of these issues. So it looks like we're going to be dealing with the same problems when we have a new leader of the state Senate, Daryl Steinberg of Sacramento, and 25 or so new state legislature.
I was going to say we're going to be humming Christmas songs before we've got any substantive movement, it looks like, and all-out wrapping presents for the holidays.
But we won't be able to afford to buy any because the economy will be in such dire straits, right?
Well, And that's something I was going to bring up quickly.
Your Christmas shopping?
Yeah, my Christmas list and trying to figure out who's going to buy me what. I was going to bring up briefly here at the end of the week. We got the annual economic outlook from the legislative analyst, from Mac Taylor, the new ledge analyst, and his staff here across the street from the Capitol. And so they kind of, you know, they put their thing out, they look at revenue projections and economic projections, you know, and we got the big headline about a week and a half ago, this notion that there's a $28 billion gap over the next year and a half, a little bit more than that, of budget
right.
talk. But when you start pouring through this document, as I was doing yesterday, we got to get rid of this charade that we're taping this on Friday. but as I started looking through the document, I mean, it goes from bad to worse. I mean, tremendously scaled back projections of, like, capital gains taxes for the state. I mean, you know, to the point of, like, you know, a two-thirds reduction over the next two years over what we got just a year ago. I mean, you know, really, really dramatic revenue declines. And still, you know, expenditure increases, not as big a gap there as on the revenue side, but expenditure increases in schools and social services programs and prisons. And my favorite, debt service, given, you know, even with the bonds that voters just approved. And so you've got a tremendous mismatch that it seems, well, we would have thought it would have been seem impossible to ignore that in years past. But I mean, how do you ignore this one, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. Although, and it's a good question for, well, I think both for Democrats who say they don't want any more cuts, and for Republicans who say they don't want any new revenues, they don't want any tax increases. I mean, you know, we're talking about the kind of economic downturn that we haven't seen in a long, long time in this state. I mean, it's not only the capital gains tax revenues, but certainly the personal income tax. You know, unemployment is expected to reach more than 9%. Early next year, and property taxes. I mean, property taxes are way, way down. And there's actually, I think for the first time in about a decade, there's projected to be a decline in property tax revenues. I mean, that's just never happened.
I think it's longer than a decade.
I think it goes back to about the Depression, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's significantly farther back.
That seems like just about a decade ago, but I guess it was longer than that. But you know, I mean, we are talking about some really fundamental shifts in the income stream for the state, and you know, there is this sort of caseload growth in things like schools and health programs and prisons that we've been funding with incremental growth in revenues, and that's changing. And so some other things have to change. I don't see any signs that we're having that kind of fundamental discussion yet, and a real acknowledgement of the fundamental paradigm shift that we're dealing with in terms of revenues.
And I think, you know, for those of us who sit here and watch this on a daily basis, I have no good idea of when I, as a Capitol reporter, will get to do any story that's not about the budget. I mean, I have a hard time understanding, you know, we haven't crossed this bridge yet, but I just want to throw it out there for a moment. I have a hard time understanding how any piece of legislation is introduced in January that does anything to change the state's expenses. I mean, I don't see anybody can justify it.
Yeah, it's certainly not with any new money. You know, one of the things that is being talked about is there's been some talk of a healthcare expansion, extending universal coverage to children in California. There are about 750,000 children in California who don't have healthcare coverage, and there's some talk that there might be a new proposal to expand coverage to those kids. But you know, the vast majority of that funding would come from a federal match, and even the state portion of that money would be a reappropriation of existing funds. You know, probably from some tobacco tax revenue that's been set aside for early childhood development. So, I mean, there's certainly no new money. It's not going to stop legislators from trying to get creative and find new ways to spend the existing money.
When we didn't do a podcast last week, as hopefully our podcast listeners didn't leave us while we were on a brief hiatus, but I was back east at an annual conference of State House reporters, and one of the discussions was about the fiscal health of different states across the country and some analysis from some people who track state-by-state budget issues. And in the middle of this discussion, the presenter looked at the group of reporters from around the country and said, well, let me show you a state that's really got problems. Let me show you some data from California. Anybody here from California? I almost didn't want to raise my hand. And we really are the poster child for state budget dysfunction in America. I mean, if for no other reason than the thing that struck me the most is in the last few years where the economy wasn't really that bad and it kind of been churning along, you know, we were making money in California too. Other states were getting their long-term structure fixed. They were putting more money away in rainy day funds. They were dealing with their governance structures in some different ways. We weren't doing any of that. And so now when the downturn comes, most other states have got something to fall back on. They've got right. ways to get out of it relatively quickly. We have nothing. I mean, we really are in a category all by ourselves.
Well, and congratulations to us. I mean, you know, one of the things that we've done here in California, which we heard a lot about towards the end of the Gray Davis era, was take one-time revenues, the sort of, you know, from these windfalls caused primarily from the real estate and dot-com booms, these one-time windfalls in property and personal income taxes, and we allocated them towards ongoing programs that would have to be funded year after year after year. And so there was money for them in the first couple of years, but guess what? I mean, then when the cycle turned, as every economist knew it would, I mean, perhaps not to this extreme. I don't know that anybody foresaw this one coming. But you know, we've got a lot of programs now that we don't have money for. So, I mean, I think that we're going to have to scale back some of the scope of government to some degree, and probably invite some new discussions about ways to finance our state government. You know, there's been a lot of talk for a long, long time that California is more susceptible to these sort of booms and busts and these cyclical upheavals because we're funded primarily from personal income tax. And personal income tax as an income stream, as a revenue source for the state, is volatile. It's very volatile, as we're seeing now. And so, you know, I don't know how we sort of move towards that large scale discussion. I mean, whether, you know, there's been some talk about a constitutional revision that seems far fetched when we can't even get a budget passed here. But we'll see what happens.
Well, everything that's been discussed so far, it seems like to me, or I shouldn't say everything, but the vast majority of things that have been talked about in these what I would call really more political posturing kinds of events and discussions have all been about systemic changes, but systemic changes take time, and it takes time for them to actually amount to any dollar change. No one seems to be talking about fixing the immediate problem. I mean, that's really the whole thing.
There is some sign of potential relief or partial relief.
What would that be,
Anthony?
And that
is from the federal government. I mean, President-elect Obama has talked about a second bailout package that would include some aid for states on various programs. Much of that aid would come from a boost in Medicaid reimbursements, some help, some extension of unemployment benefits, and some help to fund infrastructure projects that are ready to go. The House of Representatives has passed a stimulus package that has those three components in it. The U.S. Senate is debating, has a proposal of their own. The leadership, Harry Reid, and the Senate leadership has their own proposal that's actually more generous than the House proposal, but that's being caught up primarily over this issue of whether or not to bail out the big three automakers. But I do think that that California probably can depend on some targeted money from the federal government. But as the governor himself said, we're not talking about a lot of money, maybe just $5 billion a year for the next 3 or 4 years. I mean, the fact that $5 billion is not considered a lot of money and is not going to fix the entire problem, I think underscores the size and the scope of the problem we have here in California.
Yeah, I mean, look at the deficits that are projected after this year of $20 billion a year. Take 5 years, that's basically a buck out of every $4 in solutions would come from the feds, which, hey, thanks, we got it, but that's it.
It's a nice down payment, but it certainly doesn't go far enough. And you know, I mean, I don't know what has to happen. I mean, I feel like we've had this conversation before. Something tells me we're going to have it again. I don't know what has to happen for there to be some movement. And frankly, I mean, I think a lot of the movement has to come on the part of Republicans in the Senate to some degree, but primarily in the Assembly. I mean, where you know, Democrats increased their majority, but they do not have a two-thirds majority, and they still need a handful of Republican votes to get any sort of tax increase passed.
Let's talk about the perception versus reality issue for a moment, because there were a couple of examples that I thought of this week that I think are worth debating for a moment. You know, and I think people who work in politics primarily think those of us in the press are to blame for some of the perception things that they don't like. But two perception versus reality issues came up in the news this week. One was this notion that there are a fair number of legislators who have been traveling across the world and nowhere near California or Sacramento, some in India, some in China. Question is, you know, the perception, is it just a perception thing? Looks bad when you're traveling, when maybe you should be back here in case we have a budget vote, which, of course, we're clearly not having right now. And then there was a perception issue about the governor's large push for all these environmental conferences and the global warming conference he had in Los Angeles this week. And should he not be here? And his staff quickly, you know, and forcefully, you know, shot back that, you know, he's in contact by phone and he does video conferences. And even and he flew up and was here for part of it. In midweek for a negotiation session as well. But perception versus reality, Anthony, what do you think about both of those in terms of, like, you know, what impact they really have versus what it looks like they have?
I mean, I don't know that there is a difference between perception and reality in the world of politics. I mean, so much of politics is dependent on perception. And, you know, it doesn't look good when the governor's calling a special session and legislators are off in India on some sort of, you know, I'm sure it's very informative, whatever they're doing in India or China. But they're not grappling, and that goes for the governor as well. I mean, the fact that he's got essentially a photo op in Los Angeles convening this press conference when, you know, very quietly when he unveils his proposal. I mean, there is an additional irony here with the governor you know, talking about these global climate solutions and the proposal that he handed out, you know, to reporters a couple of weeks ago includes some serious rollbacks on very key environmental laws.
Well, let's talk about what they are. They're like, in effect, what it included were some temporary lifting of environmental safeguards, regulations to try to stir some of this infrastructure stuff, right?
Right, and primarily on the California Environmental Quality Act, known as CEQA, which and efforts to streamline CEQA short term to try to kickstart some development and economic growth and provide a shot in the arm to the economy. But you know, it does sort of get to the heart of some of the contradictions of Governor Schwarzenegger, where you have this an environmental governor, you know, who relishes his image as an environmentalist, who's dealing with this flailing economy. And you know, I mean, there are a lot of people who have tried to separate this dichotomy of it's either about the environment or the economy, right? But the minute we get into tough economic times, one of the first things the governor does is look to roll back some of the central tenets of California's, you know, strictest environmental laws. So I think there is a little bit of a paradox there, and it's one that is not easily reconciled.
And we clearly haven't seen a lot of other people other than the legislative leaders and the governor, some as well, here at the Capitol, because that's the way we do budgets now. We don't have full-on discussions other than the budget hearing they had last week. We don't have full-on budget discussions. We have closed-door private negotiations, which it seems like everybody, by the way, I just have to mention this, it seems like everybody involved is getting more and more cagey about the press actually knowing they're having them.
Right.
We went through a spate of that this week, which it almost seems like they don't want the constant story, to which my response is, well, too bad, because this is the primary thing that the taxpayers need to know about.
That they're not doing anything, right?
Yeah.
I mean, look, you're talking about, I mean, realistically, December 1st, the new legislature gets sworn in, right? This is Monday we're talking about. A week from Monday.
Right.
The new legislature will be sworn in, and you know, 25% of these people who will be taking the oath and will suddenly be voting have never held legislative office before. I mean, they're still getting up to speed on a lot of these issues, and they're you know, they have something not so pleasant that has landed in their lap all of a sudden. You know, I think there's a case to be made that it makes sense for some of these discussions to be going on among a small group of people who are in the know, both legislators and staff, behind closed doors. But you know, the fact that somehow they don't want the story out there that they're talking, I mean, that doesn't really mesh with the statements that we've heard from legislative leaders who have been reluctant to call their members back until there's a deal that's reached behind the aforementioned closed doors.
Well, I think part of it, though, becomes to this notion, and I said this to one person inside the Capitol this week, that what politicians really hate are process stories from the press, where we do these stories that say, you know, who's up, who's down, why are they doing it this way? You know, they don't like those. They want us to focus on the issues. But when everything is done, and see, I'm going to play slightly counterpoint to what you said, but when everything is done the way it is being done, we're left with nothing but process stories.
Right. I mean, there's certainly nothing new to report in terms of outcomes. And it sounds like, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe you have a different perception on this, but, you know, the stuff that we've heard from, you know, from Assembly Republicans, we saw, you know, there was a profile this week of Mike Vallines in the Wall Street Journal, and that was sent around by Vallines' office. So it was clear that the Vallines team was happy with the profile, where he's sort of the line in the sand to the Schwarzenegger tax increases. We've got that perception on the one hand, and then Karen Bass talking about how she doesn't want any new cuts coming and wants basically a federal bailout to replace the cuts. This doesn't sound like the end game. This sounds like the beginning of a long, torturous negotiation.
Yeah, also known as what we did this spring and summer.
Indeed. I know what you did last summer.
Yeah, I was right here. Why don't you come back to Sacramento, Anthony, and we can cover this together?
I'll be there. All right, well, not everything happens in Sacramento. It's a big state, John. You should go see it sometime.
I think I've heard that from a few politicians. All right, well, stay out of trouble in Santa Monica. That's Anthony York, the editor of Capital Weekly. I'm John Myers from KQED, and we'll see you next time.